and welcome to Mythmakers. Mythmakers is the podcast for fantasy fans and fantasy creatives brought to you by the Oxford Centre for Fantasy. My name is Julia Golding. I'm an author, but I also run the activities in our centre. Now, I know many of you who listen to this are as keen on Tolkien's work as I am. In particular, many of us share the love of The Lord of the Rings as our favourite novel, or three novels. And I thought I'd set myself a really difficult test today, and I'm going to also set it for you, which is, can you pick out your five favourite moments from The Lord of the Rings? And here I'm talking about The Lord of the Rings, the novels, and not the films. We'll perhaps take the films separately on another occasion. And when I say moments, I am not talking about my favourite character or my favourite location. I'm talking about just one or two sentences of things that, as I approach them in a reading, that I really look forward to, because it's the air punch moment where I go, yeah, that's so good. So that is the limit I've set myself. Now, I've chosen my five after much agonizing. And I wonder if you agree with me on them, or on any of them, in fact. So do let me know your own top five. But before I go to talk about mine, let's think first about Tolkien. Now, I attended a seminar series back in the autumn called Tolkien at 50 years on from his death. And one of the most fascinating things that came up during the course of that conference was finding out what Tolkien's favourite scene was, or at least what scene moved him the most and he felt most important. And the answer is actually quite surprising. It's a scene from a part of the book that doesn't make it over into the film series, and that's the chapter called The Fields of Cormallin. This comes in the middle of The Return of the King, after Frodo and Sam have succeeded in the quest. It's when they wake up. They've been carried by the eagles to a sort of grassy, idyllic place in Ithilien, which is the wooded area next to Mordor. And they wake up and they are greeted by seeing Gandalf has survived, which they didn't know to this point. And they also, there is a party where they are reunited with their friends and a ceremony. So what is it about this particular part that moved Tolkien so profoundly? You can actually see the tear stains on the manuscript, which in itself is incredibly moving. And it's the moment, I think, when Sam gets to hear that their song is going to be sung. If you remember on the stairs going up to Cirith Ungol, they talk about, Frodo and Sam talk about if theirs would make a good story. And the bit that made Tolkien weep is when they are led by Aragorn and there's sort of a ceremony with all the knights of Gondor, and they're led to sit on a sort of throne and everyone kneels to him. It's a version of the bit we see in the Peter Jackson film where everybody bows to the hobbits. And then a minstrel steps forward and says, "Lo, lords and knights and men of valour unashamed, kings and princes and fair people of Gondor and riders of Rohan and ye sons of Elrond and the Dúnedain of the North and elf and dwarf and great hearts of the Shire and all free folk of the West, now listen to my lay, for I will sing to you of Frodo of the Nine Fingers and the Ring of Doom." And when Sam heard that, he laughed aloud for sheer delight, and he stood up and cried, "Oh, great glory and splendour, and all my wishes have come true." And then he wept. And everyone else weeps, as did the writer, as did Tolkien. And you can see how the importance of story and moving people in story is so important to Tolkien. So, using that as our guiding light, our Silmaril in the darkness, we are going to think of the five great moments from the novels, all three novels. I could, of course, pick out hundreds of favourite moments, but I had to narrow myself down. So the first of my choices may come as a little bit of surprise, which is I've chosen a moment from The Scouring of the Shire. So I'm beginning at the end. Again, I really like this chapter because it wasn't done in the film. I like the fact it wasn't because it's still mine. I haven't got other people's images in the way of it. And it's a wonderful little adventure, all of its own, a story after the story. I think at one point, actually, the four actors who played the Hobbits were wondering if they could do a sort of follow-on film of this. That would have been great, actually. Maybe someone will get around to doing that. Anyway, they come back to the Shire. They've been left by Gandalf. Gandalf has more or less said to them, look, you're great enough, big enough people now to do this on your own. And that's what we find out. Everything that they meet in the Shire, they have a strategy which they have learned from watching the great people they've been amongst plan battles. And we just see how competent they've become. It's like the whole of the story up to this point has prepared them for this moment, not throwing the ring in the cracks of doom. It's this moment of saving their own land from Sauron. And it's a great little section all of its own. So if you never got round to reading the novel and you don't feel you can read the whole novel, do read just these sections because you will get so much pleasure for them. And that might encourage you to go and find out what's in the rest of the novel. But the moment I absolutely love within it all, so they're being very heroic and they're being very competent and they're raising the Shire and where they get the sort of mixed feelings of coming back to a land that they've seen changed, which was the land that kept them going all during their adventure. Sam goes to see what's happened to his old dad. He knows that things haven't been going well because he got glimpses in the mirror of Galadriel way back in book in The Fellowship of the Ring. And what's so wonderful is this moment. Gaffer is introduced to Frodo again. So here's our great heroes who have saved the West. And Gaffer brings everyone down to Earth with a great bump. He says, it takes a lot of believing, said the Gaffer. Though I can see he's been mixing in strange company. What's come of his waistcoat? I don't hold with wearing ironmongery, whether it wears well or no. And there's this wonderful Shire sense, which is what they've been fighting for after all, that he wants, you know, it's time to put down the weapons. It's time to lay aside the mail and go back to wearing your waistcoat. The other nice bit about this, which I always think when I read that word waistcoat, which is a kind of colloquial way of saying waistcoat, is that Tolkien, at one stage in his early career, worked at the Oxford English Dictionary, and he worked on W. So as well as working on words like walrus, he probably also worked on words like waistcoat. But I read that somewhere, maybe in John Garth. Anyway, I thought that was a lovely thought, that he's so aware of this word as he writes it. So for me, that signifies the humour in the book, they're also the good, solid values of it's not about war, it's about fighting to regain peace. And I just think it's beautiful. It's an absolutely wonderful moment. So that's number five. And it's kind of bundled up in the whole Scouring of the Shire chapter, to be honest. So what's at number four on my list? Well, it's another Sam moment, actually. I was surprised as I crossed things off and narrowed it down, how many of these come from Return of the King, because it's not, I wouldn't have thought of it as my favourite book as a whole. I like The Fellowship of the Ring very much. So I found that quite interesting that these moments were falling in the last book. The bit I found myself going to is the part when Frodo and Sam have been separated and Frodo is captured by the orcs. He's held at the top of the Tower of Cirith Ungol, and Sam is looking for him. It doesn't happen in the way of the Peter Jackson films. It's not been a falling out. Frodo is struck by Shelob, and Sam thinks he's dead and leaves him, which actually in a way is kind of even more awful than a falling out, and then realizes his mistake. So this is him trying to put that mistake right, trying to go back and find Frodo. So amongst the darkness, which is described beautifully, Tolkien is great at setting the scene of somewhere really terrible and hopeless and violent and grim and dirty, and it's just really well evoked. And in this setting of utter darkness, and Sam at the moment of all is lost because he can't find his master, he sits down and sings a most beautiful song. If any of you have listened to the BBC adaptation of this, Sam sings this song beautifully. And the song, I won't quote it all, but I put it in here because this is one where the poetry of Tolkien really shines out like a diamond on a black velvet background. And it goes, "In western lands beneath the sun, the flowers may rise in spring. The trees may bud, the waters run, the merry finches sing. Or there may be 'tis cloudless night and swaying beeches bare the elven stars as jewels white amid their branching hair." Ah, it's just wonderful stuff. And that haunted me really during my teenage years. I used to often hum or sing that to myself. It seems to sum up that quality that so many of us love of this piercing beauty that Tolkien captures. And it's something I think I've always looked for and keep on looking for in other fantasy stories and haven't yet found someone who matches him for that perception of beauty. I can only really find it in other poetry by other great poets. So I find it always moves me. And, well, I might as well read the second verse because it's not much, is it? And the second verse really applies to him at the moment he's in. "Though here at journey's end I lie, in darkness buried deep, beyond all towers strong and high, beyond all mountains steep, above all shadows rides the sun, and stars forever dwell. I will not say the day is done, nor bid the stars farewell." Again, so beautiful, achingly beautiful. And it connects to the moment which comes not much longer afterwards when they are making their way across the plains of Gorgoroth, I think it is, to Mount Doom, where they're again surviving on fumes. And Frodo is asleep fitfully, completely exhausted, worn out by the ring. And Sam looks up and the clouds part and he sees one star. And it's a moment where he finds that sort of gritty courage which enables him to support and half carry Frodo the last way. So the foreshadowing of that moment is in this song. It's all a beautiful web that's woven all the way through the book. Fabulous writing. So that's moment number four for me. What about moment number three? Well, has to be Eowyn. I mean, talk about Tolkien not doing very good female characters. No, the ones he does do are so, there's so much in them for us to cheer. And what's so fun about the moment when Eowyn kills the Witch King is that Tolkien is again rewriting Macbeth. So we all probably know that one of the reasons why Tolkien wrote the Ents marching on Saruman and Isengard is because of a line in Macbeth where the woods of Dunsinane appear to move. And the explanation is given that the marching soldiers are disguising themselves with greenery, like a kind of camouflage. And Tolkien found that everyday explanation disappointing, and he wanted a real wood to march upon the fortress of the bad guy. And so that's what he does with the Ents. And that's a really good prompt there for any of you out there who are wanting to write. If you've got something like that, some story that disappoints you, you can get a chance to rewrite it in your own way, move it to your own world and do what you would have done. It's a great, it will release really interesting things inside you, and you'll probably write very well about that as a result. Anyway, not that part of Macbeth he is rewriting. He is rewriting the prophecy that Macbeth won't be killed by hand of man born of woman. And the twist in the story is Macduff has been born of the equivalent of a cesarean section, ripped untimely from my mother's womb, I think is the quote. So there's that little play where the prophecy comes true. Macbeth isn't safe because his enemy has had this unusual birth. So let's go to the Battle of Pelennor and the Witch King. The Witch King is feeling very confident about his fortune because he knows that no living man may hinder him. He tells Dernhelm, who is Erwin, this. And just to also mention in the book, we are held back with the realization the first time we read it that Dernhelm is Erwin. No, we're guessing, but it's only at this moment we discover who she is, for sure. And of course, the twist in the tale here is no man does hinder him, but he is hindered by two. He's hindered by a hobbit, who isn't a man, and by a woman. And so between them, they manage to break the spell and kill the Witch King. First of all, Merry gets to stab in the back of the leg. And then, of course, Erwin has the moment where she delivers the coup de grace. And that gives her the fabulous line where she takes off her helmet and she says to him, "But no living man am I. You look upon a woman. Erwin I am, Erman's daughter. You stand between me and my lord and kin. Begone if you be not deathless. For living or dark undead, I will smite you if you touch him." That makes you want to cheer, doesn't it? It's a fabulous moment, so dramatic. And because the Witch King has told us of this prophecy, we can see, click, 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 how the prophecy is about to come true, which adds to our enjoyment of that moment. So there we are, a bit of rewriting of Macbeth for great effect. That was my number three slot. So what comes at the top of my list? Well, again, really difficult. So many things I could have chosen. But remember, I'm going for just small moments, not whole scenes. And at number two, for me, is the moment when Frodo can't throw the ring in the fire. It is so important that he can't do it. For all sorts of reasons, thematic, for Tolkien's view of the nature of humans and his faith, but also because it is surprising. The quest, you're supposed to achieve the quest. When you're right on the edge, you are supposed to kill the dragon, seize the Silmarils, whatever it is, you're supposed to be able to do it. But Frodo, he gets right up to the edge after all that struggling, all that bravery. And then he says, "I have come," he said, "but I do not choose now to do what I came to do. I will not do the deed. The ring is mine." And it's a complete, oh no, moment. We're seeing it through Sam's eyes and the devastation is clear. And again, a bit like the prophecy with Erwin, we begin to see that this whole moment has been prepared for because we all know what happens next. It's Gollum also wanting the ring that proves the thing which actually allows it to be destroyed. Not Frodo's own self-will, but something he and Bilbo did much earlier. And all the other people who showed mercy to Gollum allows Gollum to be there at that moment and do the thing by accident that Frodo cannot do. And of course, that from Tolkien's view of humanity, we're not heroes. We are sinful creatures. And so Frodo being weak, he's incredibly strong, but he shares the same weaknesses as us, that we can't do it without the help of providence. And so that's very important that the quest ends this way. It may not fit people's ideas of a sort of superhero story or something. It's not that. He isn't a superhero. He is a little hobbit who's done a really difficult task. And even so, even though he succeeds where others cannot, he still needs the help of something else outside of him to help that moment happen and the ring be destroyed. The victory over evil for the time being to be achieved. So that's my second moment, because it's a rude shock, incredibly important and very powerful, really opens up what the whole book is about. So what lies at spot number one? Well, you can imagine how difficult it was to pick it. But at spot number one, it comes in the chapter of the Bridge of Khazad-dûm in the Fellowship of the Ring. And it is the moment where Gandalf fights the Balrog. It's not that you cannot pass. Just know it's you cannot pass. Not you shall not pass. You cannot pass. It's not that moment. It's actually a few lines later where Gandalf has forced the Balrog into the chasm. And then he staggers and falls and scrabbles to hold onto the stone. And then he slides into the abyss. And it's this line, "Fly, you fools," he cried, and was gone. Wonderful bit of writing, because in that it encapsulates Gandalf's character. Our irascible wizard is still irascible. He's saying, look, I'm creating this time for you to escape, fly. But it's also done out of love for them. So he's putting himself, dying for his friends. No greater love has man than die for his friends. It's that thing. And he's dying in character, you know, dying, for the moment, dying in character with the you fools. I also love the bits where he calls Pippin a fool. You fool of a toot. We are fools in this world, and that's what Gandalf is summing up. But of course, it's the end to an epic battle. It's not walking away as the building explodes behind you, and again, in that superhero way. He is being consumed by that battle and falls into the abyss. And we, on the first time of seeing the film, we think he's gone. So we suffer the loss along with the fellowship. And so that fly, you fools, is just epic. It's my favourite moment, I think, in the whole book. So loaded with power and meaning. So they're my five top moments. I've still got hundreds of others jostling in my mind to join them, as I'm sure you have. So do let me know your own favourite moments, ones that really should have been on my list. And I hope you've enjoyed listening.
Thanks for listening to Mythmakers Podcast, brought to you by the Oxford Centre for Fantasy. Visit oxfordcentreforfantasy.org to join in the fun. Find out about our online courses, in-person stays in Oxford, plus visit our shop for great gifts. Tell a friend and subscribe wherever you find your favourite podcasts worldwide.